This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Mike Sando of The Athletic will join us. We will talk about all of the different awards, his process as an awards voter. Does Barkley have a shot? Some around the league things. We'll talk about comeback player of the year. So get his thoughts on the games this weekend. And I'll get to the games this weekend in a minute. It's an odd slate, man. I felt like this, I think it was a couple weeks ago where, man, you look on paper, just a lot of ugly games, Jags, Titans, and Giants, Saints. But that week, a couple weeks ago when we had a similar week, it was the games ended up being really good. It was 2 or 3 weeks ago. But we will start with the big game on Thursday night. The Lions beat the Packers, and it's just a really fun game to watch. You know, these Thursday night games have had a rep for a while of, it's boring. You kind of watch it because you have to. You bet it because you have to. It's almost like eating your vegetables. It's you know, a lot of low scoring, ugly games. I remember there was a Broncos Colts game a couple years ago. It was just painful to watch. The game's been good this year. This was a really good game, an important game. We had Bengals Ravens a month or so ago. We had Steelers Browns in the snow, Eagles Commanders, which was a big game for the division. So the slates have been good on Thursday. And boy, this game had a lot of back and forth. This was the last team with the ball kind of game, which is what I thought going in. And just a lot of fourth down decisions. Now, a lot of it is results-based. I do think going for it on your own 31 is a little extreme, but hey, they have the personnel for it. They get it most of the time. I don't like pitching the ball back 6-7 yards, which is what they did earlier in the game. But it comes down to 31 all. And an interesting scenario where 30 inches looks like Detroit's just going to get the first down, run out the clock, kick a field goal. They get stopped where it's 4th and inches. Now it's like, man, they can't really go for this, can they? They'll probably try to draw them off sides. They don't. They go for it, and Goff stumbles, and it looks like, oh, it's a disaster. Goff's going to stumble. They're going to stop it, but no, the handoff was clean. The play was clean. Lions get the first down. I mean, they just have good backs, good offensive line. They've got really good personnel. They kick the field goal, and the game ends, and I thought this was a really tricky one. And again, it's results-based. If Goff had tripped, and that trip resulted in a stop, and Green Bay went down and scored, people would be killing Campbell. But now that it worked, I think the criticism obviously will be less so. I was rooting for Green Bay just as a Vikings fan. I thought that obviously I'm rooting for the team that's in first place to lose. I wanted him to kick just because I think if he kicks it and he makes it, all right, there's 40 seconds left. Love is probably, you know, 50-50 to get the game in overtime, you know, indoors. I know he's got no timeouts, but it's, I mean, you get the ball at the 25, a couple first downs basically, you're in field goal range. So I wanted him to kick it. So that's always the truth serum thing. What do you want your opponent to do? And I wanted him to kick it because I thought they'd go for it on fourth down. Now, it was risky where if he doesn't get the fourth down, then Green Bay is set up where, again, need a couple first downs now to win. Now you're really letting yourself up for second guessing. But look, Campbell's going to – he's going to gamble. He went for it fourth and goal a couple times, got a couple touchdowns. We were 4 for 5 on fourth down tonight. Gamble's going to go for it. And, you know, remember last year against San Francisco – the big controversy where he didn't kick the field goals, it didn't work out. So a lot of people are just going to play the results for this. And the people that don't like going for it on fourth down are going to scream when it doesn't work. And they're not going to say anything when it does work. So it is very tedious. I generally like the aggressiveness again. I don't want to be the person that, oh, it didn't work, I'll blame it. On your own 31, probably pushing a little bit, but I mean, they've got the guys to get it. I mean, they're a big favorite to get these fourth downs. If you just don't run a stupid play where you go back, you know, 6 or 7 yards, you're going to get most of these, but it does add an element of variance when you get to these playoff games of like, hey, what's he going to do in a big spot? Is he going to fake a punt? Is he going to, you know, go for it in his own territory? And that's going to flip a game. So it's something to keep in the back of your mind, but Lions keep pace here, or on pace here to be the one seed. If they had lost, Philly would control their destiny for a one seed, and Philly's got a, you know, pretty manageable schedule. So this was a big game. Lions not out of the woods yet, as we talked about the other day. They get the Bills this coming week, so they get some time off. They play the Bills at Chicago. Chicago gives them fits. San Francisco, Minnesota, so that's not an easy 4 games. They're probably going to lose one, maybe 2 more games. I'd say at least one. I don't think they're running the table. I don't know if they'll run two. They'll lose two now because the Thursday game was a little tricky, and they got that out of the way. But I don't know, 3-1 the rest of the way, maybe 2-2 the rest of the way. It's interesting. They're vulnerable against the run. I mean, they are not a great team. They're a really good offense. That defense is starting to show some cracks, especially with all the injuries. So, fun game. Lions win. Packers are, you know, pretty much just locked into a wild card, not going to win the division. They have not done well. I mean, they showed well tonight, but lost at home to Minnesota, got swept by the Lions. So, everyone kind of pencils the Packers in as the team. And I asked Matt Eumanns this. I asked a couple of guys this recently. Hey, who's going to break up a Lions-Eagles NFC title game? Well, everyone says the Packers, but we'll see. I mean, they got good players, but I still don't love Jordan Love. I thought he was okay. He was good in the second half, but he had 31 yards passing at halftime. I don't know. Just they're a good team. I feel like they get a little bit more benefit of the doubt than they deserve it at certain points. But they were right in this game. They certainly could have won it, but they fall short. All right, picks for this week, conference title games in college. I'll start with the NFL. Like I said, ugly games in college, Jets, Dolphins, and Vikings, Falcons is hard to figure because Cousins is all beat up. There's a couple I like. I will go Philly, call it -12.5 against the Panthers. I think their run game against the Panther run D is just a complete mismatch. Tampa last week against Carolina, in Carolina, 236 yards rushing. Their running backs average 6.5 yards per carry. Philly is going to be at home with a better run game. Philly is going to run the ball at will. Maybe you play a team total over for Philly. Maybe that's a better way to go. But I like Philly in this spot. And I will go, and this is probably the biggest game of the week in Arizona-Seattle because Seattle already won. They played a few weeks ago. If they win again, they're going to be hard to catch, at least from Arizona's perspective, for this division. I lean towards Arizona winning the game, but I'll play under 44.5. I just think both these defenses have played well as of late. Seattle played the Jets last week, and that game went over, but that was misleading. That was a lot of sort of fluky points. I will go under here 44.5. They played, like I said, a couple weeks ago, and it was 16-6. That's with a pick six, a defensive touchdown. So neither team reached 300 yards of offense. Both teams gave up 5 sacks. Big game. Maybe there's a little feeling out process early. I will go under 44.5. And then in terms of the college, I mentioned the other day I like Tulane. That is a Friday night game. We got a couple games here on Friday, a bunch of games Saturday. Then we get the selection on Sunday. And boy, we haven't done a show since the selection. It's kind of what I thought, where, man, they are angling to put Bama in any way they can. Bama's in if SMU wins. Bama might get in if SMU loses, which would be the real controversy, which has started already. I like the under in Georgia, Texas. I think the most of all of these big games, just because, again, you go back and look at the rematch, and that was October. That was actually the night Soto hit the home run to put the Yankees in the World Series. It was that play at the same time, too. Both quarterbacks turned it over 3 times. Beck threw 3 picks. Ewers turned it over 3 times. I think both and neither offense really did anything. Texas, like 3-something yards per play. Georgia didn't do much. I think both coaches look at this game and say, hey, let's not turn it over early. Let's be a little conservative. Both defenses are good. So 49.5 is a lot to get to. I will go under. I lean towards Georgia winning the game. It's tough with these Georgia games. Same thing with Clemson, SMU. I feel like I'm handicapping the uniform too much. I'm deferring to, hey, Clemson's been here before. Georgia's been here before. And I know these are new teams, but that is in the back of my mind. But look, these lines are all tight. These lines are all right around a field goal. So you're not getting any big numbers here. These books are basically, these games are telling you these games are pretty much toss up. So it'll be a lot of fun. Boise UNLV will be fun. Boy, that's another one. They played a month ago and the line was 4, but you flip venue, so it's like a 6-point adjustment because that game was in UNLV. Now you're playing in Boise. I would lean towards taking the points there, but I like Tulane and I like the Georgia Texas under. Those are my two plays for college, and we'll see what the selection committee comes up with here on Sunday. But coming up, Mike Sando will get his thoughts on awards this weekend, big picture stuff in the NFL. Where's Belichick going? Belichick actually interviewed for University of North Carolina. I talked to Mike before I recorded this. So that's a curveball, but we'll see if Mike thinks Belichick's going to be in the NFL next year and where. That is next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. He does a great job covering the NFL at The Athletic. Everything he writes is smart, is interesting. It is Mike Sando. Mike, it's funny. 1 minute, we're sitting here in August talking quarterback tiers, and then you blink, and we're in week 14. The season certainly goes by fast, doesn't it?
It does. I keep a little ledger. You know, I know how many columns I do during the season, and I'm more than halfway through. Because I go through the Super Bowl, too. But, yeah, we're more than halfway through, and the offseason will be here before you know it.
Incredible. I want to get to some big picture stuff, but let's start with awards because you are an awards voter. I just want to pick your brain in terms of like what your process is. Are we at the point of the season where you'll kind of update things week by week, almost like a college football committee, and just adjust your rankings? Or do you take the approach, hey, I'll let the season play out. Once the season ends, then I'll evaluate things.
I sort of take stock during the season. I don't know that it becomes a week to week thing where I'm, you know, have a leader or not. Like if I had to vote today, you know, I don't know for sure what I would do. I did write a column this last week about, you know, I think I think sometimes in the MVP race, we get so week to week, you know, and so over the last 2 weeks, the Ravens have lost a couple games. Lamar Jackson wasn't necessarily completely on fire. Saquon Barkley does well. The Bills win again. And now everyone's, now the odds change or whatever, right? I'm a little bit more, hold on. Let's take into account the big picture of the season. I would generally, I think generally a quarterback should win the award. Generally, it's not always true. I mean, if we're never going to say that a non-quarterback is more important than a quarterback, right? More valuable to a team. Shoot, you could make a case that the 18th best quarterback is more valuable with a V than the best running back. You could do that. I don't feel like I have to stick to it that literally. I think a really special season can be rewarded, and what's that number? If you look at when Adrian Peterson won as a running back, he had a 2,000 yard year. That was they weren't an amazing team, the Vikings. Their record was maybe 10-6 or something like that. But there wasn't, I don't, you know, I think maybe Peyton Manning had a good year, might have been his first year with Denver, but there wasn't necessarily like a record setting or amazing by a quarterback standard season. So, in that case, I think it's okay to say, you know what, this guy had a better year. I'm okay with doing that. Some of my, contemporaries who are really into the V word, not Veasan, but valuable, just can't do it. They can't bring themselves to do it. But for you, like, what's that number for you on a running back? Like, if a running back rushed for 4,000 yards, would people be like, nope, sorry, it's just not that valuable, right? Well, what's the number? Is it a 2,000 yard season? Is it setting the record? Do you have to take a bunch of other things into account,
I would probably admit that there is no number for me. I'm biased towards the quarterbacks just because you pointed it out perfectly. Adrian Peterson, great season. He wins the MVP. I'm a Viking fan. I remember week one of the wild card round, they played Aaron Rodgers and the Vikings couldn't get past midfield with Adrian Peterson on their team. You would have much rather had Rodgers, and Rodgers was, the best quarterback or thereabouts in the league that year. So to me, the best quarterback is always more valuable than the best running back. You could put a bunch of running backs on Philly. They wouldn't be as good, but they wouldn't really lose a step. If you put like a, it'd be interesting, Derek Carr, Cousins, who are the guys middle of the pack quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield on Buffalo. They're like a 500 team. I just think the best quarterback's the most important player.
Is that though? Okay. So you take the V word more literally. Like to me, there's a number for a different position. It's interesting that 2012 year, Calvin Johnson had 1,900 yards, receiving too. It was close to going over. So I felt like last year, I voted for Lamar Jackson, last year, but I sort of had to justify doing it. I didn't feel like he had this amazing, it wasn't even close to his 2019 year. I felt like, I justified it saying, hey, this is the leading passer and leading rusher for a top five team in a league that's pretty good on offense, and I was good with that. But what would I have done if last year Saquon Barkley had 2,200 yards, and I think the winning context is important. We have to vote before we know what happens in the playoffs. Shoot, Lamar got to the playoffs, didn't I don't remember Lamar winning going to the Super Bowl last year, right? I would consider a running back having a super special season, I think. I just haven't come off of that.
Does it factor into your vote at all that the fact that Lamar's won it last year, he won it before, hasn't really backed that up with playoff success, or that's just completely not part of the equation for you?
It's not that big of an equation for me. I was talking to someone yesterday who used to work in a front office, and we were going back and forth on this. We have good conversations, and he had a theory, I think, that if you get a couple MVPs and then, but you haven't had playoff success, it's like harder to keep winning them. Like that people sort of go, okay, But I think Lamar's having such a better season this year than last year. And the thing that I take into account because of the way that I've studied quarterbacks is I'm really attuned to how the games are actually won. And last year, the Ravens actually won because of their defense mostly. This year, the Ravens are three games above 500 with a bottom five defense. Well, when I looked at anyone who's done that before in the last, 10 years, it's all guys who won the MVP. It's 2016, Matt Ryan was 8-5 with a bad defense. It's Patrick Mahomes twice, maybe in 18 and 22. And there was one other year. I'm trying to think of who it was, but it's Lamar this year. To me, that's super impressive to have be a winning team when you have a bottom five defense. I think historically it's what separates Mahomes from even Brady, and Terry Bradshaw and Troy Aikman and Brett Favre and Tom, all these guys who won a lot of championships. Like, they all had top defenses usually. You know, you look at the 49ers defenses in the 80s with Joe Montana, they're unbelievable. They led the league in the 80s for fewest points allowed. So to me, I really love it when a quarterback is winning in having to carry the bad defense. That's my betrayal index. You know, I think that's super impressive. So what Lamar's doing this year, it'd be like if Joe Burrow was 8-5. You know, he's not, because Lamar's team beat him. But if you have a good record with that type of defense, I give you some credit as a quarterback that maybe other people would be looking at Josh Allen and saying, well, he's got more wins. Okay, they're top 10 defense. You know that, right? It's easier to win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually of the belief that the late charge means something, that you can get momentum, that you know, you finish strong, leave a lasting impression. That being said, I think Allen would, man, have to fall apart to not win this, just because he hasn't won before. It feels like it's his turn, kind of, you know, that the narrative coming into the season where, well, it's like, oh, it's a rebuilding year. You know, they meet new pieces defensively. Just feels, again, we still have 4 or 5 weeks here and they play the Lions. They've got some tough games, but barring a collapse, I think if Allen just plays reasonably well, he's probably going to win the award.
See, and I'm not, see, those are all narrative storyline things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's nice. Oh, what was it? You know, and I try to get away from that. I try to get away from that. I'm a Hall of Fame voter too. Like, I don't want to get into the stories. Like, to me, have a criteria, you know?
Last awards one, speaking of criteria, caused a lot of controversy last year. Comeback player of the year, Hamlin, everything he went through, Flacco ends up winning. Now there's some guidelines on it. Have you thought about this award? Where would you be leaning? Do you eliminate the Darnolds, the Russell Wilsons? I actually thought, like, Bryce Young, could he win it for being bad in the same year as he's good? Where are you at with comeback player of the year?
I have. Well, yeah, they have told us it can't be just the guy who didn't come back from anything, but was just sort of not as good last year, right? Or didn't play. I haven't thought about it 1 minute. You know, I'll sit down with the whole ballot at some point at the end of the year and really think it through. And that includes MVP. You know, we're just sort of spitballing here, and I have some certain things that I would take into account, but I'm not even close to having that stuff written down, you know?
Yeah, I was just wondering if, hey, this is a suggestion or this is a firm guideline. I'm always curious, you know, how
I think
how...
it was a firm guy. I think
yeah,
it was
I thought
a
so
firm
too.
Guideline.
I thought
yeah,
so
I
too.
just have to look at the Well, I took it to be, hey, stop doing this, you know, go
yes.
You know, a little bit. But I'll look at that again too. I haven't looked at it since they sent it out, you know.
Right.
And I will hear, you know, as we get down to the stretch. And I'm also respectful of the process too. You know, they don't want us tipping our hands exactly with everything we're going to do, because there's gambling implications on this. And I get some of that with some of the questioning. People want to know, ooh, and then pretty soon they're keeping a list of how everybody thinks, and I don't want that to be the case either.
Got it right here. I'm writing it down. Now, a couple just general things around the league. Where's Belichick coaching next year?
I think if he coaches next year, I could see the Giants possibly, and I don't know if they're going to change. I could see that. I think he's always wanted to be there. I don't think that it's a Chicago thing at all. Okay, people are talking about, I mean, every time you turn around, it's Kyle Shanahan, John Gruden. They're not going that direction. They're going with somebody who's going to fit into their system, not someone who's going to revamp their system and be the leading voice necessarily for everything they do. So I could see that. I don't know about I don't know what Dallas is going to do. You know, I haven't really thought that he would likely go there, but you never know with owners. So probably the Giants is one that we'll just see how it goes down the stretch. I don't know what they're going to do. But it's been such a frustrating year, you know, for them.
Yeah, it's been a frustrating, man, it's been a lot of frustrating years for the Giants. It has not gone well for a while here, barring that one, you know, kind of outlier year, the Dable's first year a couple years ago. I think Cincinnati would be the perfect team. I know all the reasons why it won't happen. They're cheap. They don't want to fire the current guy. But man, if you put Belichick on a team where he's already got the offense, all he has to do is fix the defense, that would be perfect. Just don't know if it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I hadn't really thought of them as much that they would do that. When you look at who's going to go where, you know, it was a short list last year of teams that would consider him, because the people who are in power really don't want to hand over all the power, right? I think the Patriots are thrilled to not have that, even though they won a ton of games with Bill Belichick. They get to sort of run their team. That's why when I look at when you watch the Kevin Warren press conference with Ryan Poles, Bill Belichick ain't sitting there for 8.5 minutes while Kevin Warren talks about everything, how we're going to do things, right? And that's what happened at the press conference. That tells you, just like in Atlanta last year, everyone thought Belichick's going there. Well, their Kevin Warren is Rich McKay, and they want to have some guidelines, I believe, on how they're going to do business. And when you bring in a Belichick, all the, you know, it all the juice goes to them. And I think there's just not a lot of people that want to do that organizationally, and just everyone else gets out of the way, and this is guy's going to run the whole thing. The Giants maybe would a little more, you know, and I think that that history where, if you look at John Mara, you know, his dad Wellington hired Bill Parcells, and I could picture John Mara being on the practice field when, when Parcells was running that defense, or Parcells was coaching the team and Belichick was running that defense, and it could just sort of make sense. And it's a full circle thing for Belichick, right? He's been there before. He has a great love for that organization. I don't know what they're going to do. They could stay the course. We haven't heard anything lately, but that would be in the back of my mind there.
What do you think the Ravens will do with Tucker? What do you think they should do with Tucker?
I think they'll probably ride it out. Now, I do think there's a breaking point for everybody. Like, you can't just have this happen every game the rest of the year. I think then they would. I could see then. I don't know. Would he go? Is he injured? They go on some sort of a list where you're not going to cut him. I mean, he's a legend for them. It's tough, but I do think there's a breaking point for that if he were to just keep, missing two kicks every game. I mean, then there's a problem, and they have to have someone else up on the roster, or I don't know what the story would be told, right? But you can't have that. I think, though, mostly with kickers, they don't know how to fix them. You know, they usually just have to live with it, especially a guy like that.
You use the term breaking point. I thought it was last week against Philly when he missed two, and I was surprised they trotted him out there from what 53 or whatever. That being said, they play the Giants their next game after this bye. So maybe, hey, we could beat the Giants with whoever. We have one more chance to get him on track, but it's got to be soon. You can't just let him go out there and sabotage yourself. I mean, this is a Super Bowl caliber team, and he's costing them games. He might cost them the division. So very
Yeah.
tricky spot. It really is.
I don't think he's missed from inside 40, other than maybe an extra point he missed. I don't think he's been like just absolutely chunking the short ones. It's been more on those longer ones that we took him for granted on. And really, 40 to 50 should be one you really think you're going to make, and it hasn't been as much for him. So I'm with you. I'm with you. It's a real difficult situation given his, the equity he has with the team. He gets a longer
Sure.
runway.
Two quick ones before I let you get out of here. Bryce Young, is the resurgence real?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the truth is usually in, like, the resurgence. It's not like he's been amazingly on fire. I think he's been
Competent.
viable. He's been competent, and I think it was a little surprising as how bad his production was and how overwhelmed he looked. That was a little surprising. I think we could all knew that there could be some question marks with his size, and he obviously wasn't an amazing athlete who could create. So it probably had to be better around him than it does around some other guys. I was surprised it looked as bad as it did. So this is probably, looks really good by comparison, but it's not like he's, doing amazingly. He's just doing his job. And I think that's, I'm surprised that he's been able to churn it like this. When you have eight, he was 2-16 as a starter with really bad numbers. So it's surprising to me that you would have that much of a terrible, resume and then become viable after a few weeks off. Maybe there's something to be learned there. Maybe it's just reflects really well on him, that he took it to heart and got his game together. And maybe he has a coach who's giving him a different type of confidence. So I think that's a big deal. And Canales totally unproven. Didn't know what we were getting, but he comes from Pete Carroll. And I always believed that Pete Carroll was very underrated with quarterbacks. He's a defensive guy. He's a big picture guy. No one thinks of him for like some amazing scheme or coaching of on offense, right? Or coaching of the quarterback. But he's a belief instiller. And for that position, you talk to those guys, it's a big deal when someone believes in you. So maybe it couldn't turn it around in the first couple games, but maybe when he got to step out, maybe Canales is working with him and saying, look, giving him some of that positivity, and maybe it feels genuine. Maybe it helped him get going again.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. I mean, I think it's unlikely that he'll ever live up to being worthy of the first overall pick in a first overall pick where people
Yeah.
you know, teams traded up to get him and give up stuff. But hey, he looks like he can at least be, like, use the word viable. I think that's the perfect word, which is a vast improvement from what it was. Last one. Any thoughts on the games this weekend? Kind of a weird slate, bunch of ugly games, you know, Jags, Titans, man, you go down the line, Arizona, Seattle. I know in your neck of the woods is a big one. Take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't convince anyone anywhere else in the country that that's a big game, but I that's the biggest one from, I think Aaron Schatz put out there. It's the biggest leverage game for, you know, making the playoffs or not. And so I'm very interested in that game. I think Seattle's interesting because their defense has really become good the last few weeks. You can see Mike McDonald's kind of turning that, but the offense is kind of all over the place. I think people thought that would be something that, hey, we know that Geno Smith and those receivers, they have a good back, but they've been really hit miss. So now they play Arizona the second time in 3 weeks. Cardinals have been competitive. This is huge for Arizona. I mean, they can't get swept by Seattle. So I think that's probably the game that I'm most interested in this week.
Yeah. And it's funny, Seattle, it looked like their season was about to be over, and it's like a turning point for both teams because they were about to lose to the 49ers. 49ers just needed one first down a few weeks ago. Seattle gets a stop. They go down the field. Geno Smith scrambles for a touchdown. Next thing you know, Seattle's flying. They take off and San Francisco's dead. So that's kind of a turning point moment.
It really is. Yeah, I think the 49ers are interesting too, just because of where they're at and where they've been. But it is a weird slate. I'm with you. I was looking at it kind of going, you know, there's not a lot of, yeah, the Thursday night game's good.
Yes.
We'll get to see that.
Yeah, the 49ers remind me a little bit of Mike Tyson at the end of the Jake Paul fight, where they're just kind of wheezing. They played a lot of games the last 4 or 5 years, injuries, you know, holdouts, you name it. Now the horrible thing with Trent Williams, just it's like whack-a-mole. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's just not their year. It really isn't.
58-year-old Tyson is 58-year-old 49ers. Yeah. That was you watched that fight, I'm sure.
I tried to watch that fight. Netflix did not exactly cooperate, and then once they did, it was boxing gives us way too many of these. You get excited and then it's all for nothing.
It's an amazing sport that sells hope, you know, and it gets you going every time. The curiosity factor is amazing. I was a big boxing fan for a long time, and you're going to be disappointed. So hopefully the rewards, there's enough of them, you know. So
yeah, nothing like the anticipation of a big fight. It's something we miss. Mike, I appreciate the time, man. It was good to catch up. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, definitely. You can find me at The Athletic first and foremost, and then at Sando NFL on X.
All right. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Thank you.
All right, thanks to Mike Sando. Enjoy the weekend. A lot of football. We will have the 12 playoff teams next time we talk. So rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Monday.